Almost. I'm so excited. I'm excited for two things. Number one, I live next door to a couple of people that I viscerally loathe. They will like, they'll like smack on the wall when they think I'm being too loud, like playing with my dog or something.
Oh, they're those people?
That couple. And one is from Wisconsin and one is from Minnesota, my two most hated states in the union, because everybody that I've met from either one of those states is awful. But so yelling on the podcast is like cathartic, because I know that they're sitting next door just fuming over the fact that I can be over like 3 decibels loud. Very excited about
Listen, you were here last week. You were as loud as humanly possible. Right next door to us is a very nice couple with a newborn baby, and we didn't hear anything from them. We didn't get it. We didn't,
we didn't get evicted. And they have a newborn baby. Yeah. What?
So.
Also, by the way, Nicole did say that everybody in your apartment building hates you, which I think is funny.
Oh God, yeah, because they've not just me watching sports. Like, you know, Nicole gets
Nicole's
gets
just as crazy.
Too.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Which
and
is
for
fantastic.
Me, with my voice, I can just be talking at a slightly higher than normal level, and it will rumble through floors, and people will think I'm angry or yelling.
And yet, they don't bang on the wall or the ceiling if they're below you. They're just normal people who, like any good human being, swallows their rage and lets it build inside of them into a tumor,
until they
as
die.
Will happen with me, until they die. That's what normal people do. You don't smack on the wall like an asshole.
I hope they can
hear
you, and they're just like, oh,
I know, God,
oh,
I
man,
hope they do too.
Oh, man, later tonight, I'm going to smack on this guy's wall
banging
so
on the door.
Hard.
It's going to be so great. So, hey, welcome in. It's episode number 97 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, the season preview episode for the 2017 Colorado Rockies campaign. I am Tyler Mon.
I'm Anthony Masterson.
And we got a loaded show for you coming up today. Programming note, we're actually already done with all three interviews. Jesse Spector is coming up next. Brian Kilpatrick will follow him. Travis Randos will follow those two. We'll go national preview, Rockies preview, Milwaukee Brewers preview, as the Rockies will open with 4 games on the road in Milwaukee to kick off the 2017 season. This is one hell of a show today.
Yeah, this is as jam-packed, I think, as our show has ever been.
Yeah, I think so. As soon as we got done recording Travis's interview, you mentioned that maybe this is the first ever three-interview show that we've had, and I think you've got to be right.
I think so. I mean, this is wild, wild stuff.
It has to be. Yeah, man.
Good for us.
Wild, wild stuff.
Pushing the envelope here.
We're making things
Snappy.
So it goes on. So it goes on in this podcast. So with that, let's dive right in. We have some very exciting news. If you do not follow us on Twitter, you can now buy your official 2017 Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirt at purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. Our good friends at Humble Monster putting together another t-shirt for us this year. Anthony and I came up with the idea. I designed it. They took it the rest of the way. It's phenomenal. We've sold a ton of shirts
really
already.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's the most Trump-like I've ever sounded. It's phenomenal. We sold a ton of shirts already.
It's
but
terrific.
Both of those things are actually true. Yeah, no, it's the greatest. It's the greatest shirt that anybody has ever worn, ever. But you can get your Party Deck Against the World shirt now at purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. I love it, man. I'm so excited to rock this
shirt. It's a good-looking shirt. If you order now, you can get it by Rockies opening day. Wear it down there.
Yep.
Wear it down at Coors Field. Wear it on the party deck and get really, really meta with it. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Exactly. It's going to be amazing. The best possible description, somebody tweeted at us a couple of days ago and said, I'm really excited to wear this and then decline to explain it when asked about it. Which is the best possible description of the new PDP shirt for 2017. So go find that. And while you're there ordering your shirt online, you can head to iTunes, you can head to the Stitcher app, wherever else you get your podcast. Give us a rating, give us a review, give us a subscription, and all that kind of fun stuff. And, all right, let's get rolling. We're going to talk about the 2017 season in your Colorado Rockies and breaking camp soon. Today's the last spring training game, as we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, right? Isn't this it?
No, who cares?
No, they got one. No, they got... Who cares? No, they got one on Saturday, but a lot of people start breaking camp. They have one tomorrow and one on Saturday, but people start breaking camp. The minor league guys are all headed out within the next few days. They'll head off to their seasons, which will start on Thursday for the full season guys. The Rockies will have one off day between their last spring training game on Saturday and their opener on Monday. But how you feeling right now? You feeling good?
About the Rockies or just about life in general?
Let's go both. I mean, you and I drank flaming margaritas last week, so that I'm still riding the high of that.
I mean, this is the most optimistic we have been about the Rockies, and the most optimistic that other people have been about the Rockies. Not just us. It's not just us saying like, oh, you know, if things go right, you know, we know about these people. We know about, you know, this kid named Garrett Atkins coming up, like whatever. People now realize the Rockies could be a trendy pick. And I know we've been said it a few times that it's going down the line of the NL West teams. It was the Padres 2 years ago. It was the D-backs last year. Now it's the Rockies people are coming around on. But, I mean, there are tangible reasons why people are excited about this team. This pitching staff looks like it could be the best it has ever been in franchise history. John Gray will set to lead the charge on Monday in Milwaukee, followed by Tyler Anderson and Tyler Chatwood. And then after that, we'll talk about that in a moment. Who's going to be the 4 and 5 spots? We shall see. But this offense is going to be great. I know they've had some injuries dealing with so far. We'll talk about that as well. The Desmond, Tommy Murphy, David Dahl. But if they can get through April and May with all of these injuries they've had and that they get those guys back and put the roster on the field that they intended to have when they put it together over the offseason, there's no reason to say why this team couldn't be the best in franchise history, couldn't be the most talented in franchise history. There's a lot of things to like about the Rockies this year, especially from that pitching staff.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that topic then, because as of right now, everything is set on this roster. We found out today Harrison Musgrave has been sent down to AAA Albuquerque. Jordan Patterson has been sent down to AAA Albuquerque. Kind of the last two pieces to fall as far as guys who maybe were still on the bubble for a spot on the Major League roster. Harrison Musgrave, by the way, eventually we're going to have to talk about him because he's really fun.
Spring.
He's a really fun prospect. He has got drafted out of West Virginia. Really struggled in his debut season in Grand Junction. Then the Rockies were like, why don't we just skip him over low A? He goes to high A, dominates with Modesto, made it to AAA last year. He's a fun prospect that not a lot of people are aware of because he's not one of the huge names pitching-wise. But as we know, right now, there are two spots vacant in this Rockies rotation. We knew the number 5 spot was going to be open. The number 4 spot, because of Chad Bettis and his illness right now, is
get
vacant
well soon,
as well.
Chad, of course.
Get well soon, Chad Bettis. And but that leaves the Rockies with 2 vacant spots in the rotation and really 4 guys to fill those spots. What we've seen is a very good spring from Kyle Freeland, a very good spring from Antonio Senzatella. Herman Marquez has been up and down. Jeff Hoffman's been up and down. Who do you think of those 4 gets those 2 spots?
Hoffman was already sent down, so we know he's out of the rotation. He's been in AAA along with Harrison Musgrave, as you mentioned, down there this year. I think Antonio Senzatella is going to break camp with the team in the starting rotation. He's the most surprising. We talked about on the podcast last week, considering the 2016 that he had where he got hurt and then his mom passed away. He went to go back to be with her during the season. Really only made, I think, about 7 starts throughout the year. So it was not really a kind of a lost season for him. He didn't really get on the mound. But the fact that he came back this offseason, came into spring training without really – major expectations. They weren't really sure what to expect from him, and he came out and just absolutely shoved his way through the Cactus League. I mean, he pounded the strike zone. He got the ball up to 98 a couple of times.
Sounds really painful, by the way. Shoving your way through the Cactus League.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
Of all the leagues. Like the Grapefruit League would be like juicy and delicious.
But then you just get sticky.
The Cactus League. Well, true. At least you're not getting stabbed.
Yeah, well, you know, I would take stabbed over sticky any day.
Season number 4, the same mature baseball analysis from the Purple Dinosaur Podcast you've come to expect and love.
Oh, God, it is season number 4.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, and so I think Senzatella, I think he has earned it. I think Bud Black has been raving about his demeanor on the mound. I think, you know, maybe some of the numbers you don't like in spring training, but again, they're spring training stats. The ERA is near 5, but the strikeout-to-walk ratio, 19-3 this spring, I think – he impressed a lot of people, and I think he will nab one of those jobs. And I think Herman Marquez. I think Marquez, his spring has been a little bit up and down, as we mentioned, but he did get some experience last year in the big leagues. I think he's got an excellent chance. And after we talked to Purple BK, to Brian Kilpatrick, he was even conjecturing a different scenario where it would be not only Senzatella and Kyle Freeland making the rotation, but the team keeping Herman Marquez on the 25-man roster as the second longman out of the bullpen, which I think is very, very smart. But unless you wanted to keep Marquez and get him, you know, a start every 5th day in Albuquerque, that if he needs more seasoning, that's fine. But we've seen Marquez pitch this spring. For whatever reason, some of the games the Rockies have had, the handful of games they've had on TV, Marquez seems to have been pitching almost all of them. So I've seen Germán Marquez more than I have anybody else this spring. Marquez, he has got major league stuff. And whether it translates consistently is the next step for him. But he's still very, very young. And I think he's got some of the better stuff of the three. They're between Freeland, Sensatella, and Marquez. I think Marquez has the best stuff. Maybe not harnessing it the best yet of anybody. But I think if he does not, as Brian Kilpatrick will posit later in the show, make the team as a long reliever, I think he will be the number five man at starting rotation.
Okay. I mean, we talked a little bit before we started recording today about this discussion. And yeah, we hadn't even really considered the fact that maybe Marquez is your long guy, is your swing guy in the bullpen. But I think as of the evidence in front of us from the spring, I think Kyle Freeland and Antonio Senzatella have positioned themselves as your four and five starters, probably respectively. I would say Senzatella, since he doesn't have any experience over double A as of right now, if he makes that jump, he probably slots into the five spot, and you get Kyle Freeland going as your second left-hander in the rotation in the four spot. But those two guys, I mean, the results have been there. And the thing with Antonio Senzatella, as you pointed out, last year, yeah, he only made seven starts. They were seven dominant starts. Senzatella shoved in the Eastern League. And he had the shoulder issue, and then obviously he had this heartbreaking situation with his mom that none of us knew about until last month when Thomas Harding finally wrote a story about it. The Rockies decided to release that story, as crushing as you can imagine anything could be for a young man in any context. But especially a guy who's already suffering through a frustrating season, Senzatella, with the injury and all that type of stuff. And then his mom gets cancer and he goes home to Venezuela and she passes away. But I got a chance to talk to Zach Wilson, the Rockies director of player development, about Senzatella earlier in the month for our Rockies prospect primer at MILB.com. And what he said was Senzatella is a fighter in every sense of the word on the mound in the most intense ways that you would expect. And when he's pushed by something that's bigger than baseball, it brings it out of him even more.
Yeah.
And the fact that this is a guy who went through so much off the field last year, that's his sanctuary. Being back on the mound is that kid's sanctuary. And for Antonio Senzatella, the stuff has always been so good. The results have always been so good. It sounds weird to say about a guy who's only made seven starts at double A, but I don't know what else developmentally Antonio Senzatella really has. I think obviously there are steps, there are incremental things that you can do in double A and triple A to round out the package, but it would not surprise me if he is the anti-Eddie Butler, if he comes up from double A and really succeeds, because the stuff is that good. As of right now, it seems like he's 100% healthy. He is that good. Senzatella is the real deal. Kyle Freeland has been the bigger surprise to me, because Kyle Freeland at the end of last season had a fantastic finish to the year in Albuquerque, but it seems like we're still just barely getting to know him. He didn't pitch a lot in his debut season because of some stuff coming out of college. They wanted to make sure that he was limited. And even in 2015, Freeland, as you'll recall, was taken one pick ahead of Jeff Hoffman, oddly enough, in the first round of 2014. But in 2014, only made 10 starts. 2015, only made 9 appearances. And then last year, he goes wire to wire, 26 starts, 12 in Albuquerque, 14 in Hartford, a AAA and AA. Combined, he puts up a 3.89 ERA, strikes out 108, walks 44 in 162 innings. Opponents batted 268 against him, like all pretty good numbers. But Freeland this year has come out and looked like a dude in big league spring training games. And that is all you can ask for from a guy who really felt like coming out of school was going to have a fast track to the big leagues. Then he only goes out and makes 19 appearances in his first 2 years. And you kind of think, well, what do we have in this guy? Last year put him back on the map. This year shows that he's ready for the big
leagues. Yeah. And I mean, 19 punchies and 20 and two thirds innings in this spring. I mean, yeah, he is, for a lefty, you know, he has come out and been as impressive as anybody in camp. And for Senzatella, for the last year, like, he only made seven starts, you mentioned, but it was a 172 or 182 ERA in those seven starts, 34 and two thirds innings at Hartford.
Right.
It's almost like the Rockies were playing the show and they just simulated the rest of Senzatella's season and put out his averages over, you know, 30 starts and go, okay, well, if he put up those numbers in double A, there's no reason why we wouldn't expect him to try to make camp coming in the next year, because they knew he had the personal situation. So it's almost like they just did his work for him, put out those numbers throughout, you know, over the course of a full season, and said, all right, well, we're going to think that whatever you do in camp, you're playing for a spot in this rotation. Obviously, the Chad Bettis news, it opened the door for somebody else, whether it was Hoffman, Marquez, Freeland, Senzatella, whomever. But it's almost like they were expecting him to do this. And that's why I think he has the leg up on everybody else in camp, because they've seen what he can do. Career ERA of 2.45 in the minors. Three, 4 years, he hasn't had an ERA over 3.11 since the last 3 years. I mean, that's...
Remember 3.11 the band?
I do remember 3.11 the band. They did, in fact, come original.
Yeah.
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 So...
They're from Omaha, yes. I believe.
Sure.
Yeah, they are. They're from Omaha. Like Bright Eyes.
Yes. Well.
Same thing. Just giving some shout-outs to Omaha, Nebraska. Good people come from Omaha, Nebraska. Continue.
But I really do think that was how they viewed Senzatella coming in. They said, okay, well, we're going to throw last year out and just say, however you perform, this is going to be great. And by the way, this is just a quick side note. Watching the Rockies game right now, Rockies Padres, there are bees infesting the entire stadium.
Yeah, I heard about this.
But
I saw this on Twitter a little bit ago. Apparently, in the middle of the broadcast, Goodman just said, "Do you hear bees?"
And they're right next
all of a sudden
the
they found.
This scene right now, there are the pitcher, the catcher, the umpire, and the home plate hitter are all lying flat on their stomachs on the field. This is incredible. Okay, sorry. We can cut this out, but
that sounds amazing
right now, and I am dying. Anyway,
that is fantastic.
That's quacktastic.
Not for them, I guess, but it's fantastic for us.
Okay. Well. Anyway,
what's happening?
Anyway, I just tweeted the picture.
Oh my god, that caption. Oh, that is fantastic. Not the bees. That is amazing. That is amazing. This is a real live podcast recording we got
going
on.
We're breaking a lot of news on this podcast.
I'm not cutting any of this out, good, by the way.
It's so enthralling.
So anyway, what were we talking about?
Kyle Freeland and Tony Senzatella. There's no doubt about it that Senzatella has impressed, I think, more than anybody. And Freeland, you wanted Freeland to be that guy. I think Senzatella, I think he has earned his spot more than anybody so far in the spring.
Yeah. No, I agree. And the thing I really like about the push that Antonio Senzatella is making is Bud Black seems to be infatuated with Antonio Senzatella. And I really like that because I like a manager who keeps an open mind to the fact that, yeah, I haven't been around these guys before. I just got into this organization in November. These are all new guys to me. But if what I'm told from my player development staff is accurate, these are guys who should be able to compete for major league jobs coming out of spring training. Bud Black not only has embraced that, but the fresh eyes that he's given to this battle, I think, has really pushed all of these guys to be better than the last. Yeah, Jeff Hoffman struggled a little bit, but it seems like he's starting to get a handle on how he wants to mix pitches, how he wants to approach hitters, that type of stuff. Herman Marquez, a very high ceiling. Maybe we'll see him in the bullpen. But Kyle Freeland has been fantastic. Antonio Senzatella has been fantastic. Another note that I want to toss out there, we were talking about Kyle Freeland and the loss of the power stuff from him. When he came in, you really expected a ton of strikeouts. He finished second in Division I in strikeout rate in his final season in college at Evansville. He struck out 11.6 per nine innings in his draft year. But even though in his professional career so far, he's only struck out 6.1 batters basically per nine innings, there's a reason behind that. And that's something you always want to keep in mind when you talk about prospects. There is not always a story that is told completely via minor league stats.
Right.
And Zach Wilson, another thing that he's said multiple times to me is that he does not know, nor does he really pay attention to numbers at the minor league level anywhere, because that's not the point. Stats don't matter in the numbers. Stats matter when you get to the major leagues. He knows the development plan. He knows if a guy is throwing well or if a guy is hitting well, if a guy's playing well defensively. But the numbers in minor league baseball don't really bear out the full story. And the reason Kyle Freeland's strikeout numbers have likely been down is because the Rockies have really been having him focus on getting the changeup better and getting outs with early contact and counts. And those are two very positive things. But you also know that the dimension is there. If Kyle Freeland needs to reach back for an upper 90s fastball, he's got it there. He can touch 96. He's also got ridiculous the slider that Kyle Freeland throws. We think John Gray's slider is good. Kyle Freeland's might be as good. So these guys, I mean, these are guys who we've been talking about this on this podcast for 4 years.
Yes.
The Rockies have dudes that are making this happen. John Gray was one of the guys we talked about first on this show about how he was a dude who was going to make it work, and he has. Tyler Anderson has been the same way. For these guys, for Kyle Freeland, for Antonio Senzatella, for Jeff Hoffman, who still, despite the struggles, may have the highest ceiling of all of them, for Germán Márquez, and for guys that are even lower in this organization, you know, somebody that nobody talks about outside of the prospect nerd community, Ryan Castellani, who pitched last year in the California League at 19, guys like that are really very talented players. And this is not smoke that's being blown to try to get you to buy into the Rockies. John Gray is the tip of the iceberg. Maybe not anybody has that same ceiling, except for Riley Pint. But these dudes that are coming, these are all dudes. These are not just roster fillers. This is a legit staff that the Rockies are developing, and we're finally seeing the rewards being reaped from this system that we've talked about for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's not enough to get you excited about this team. I don't know what is. I mean, It's the draft and development scam that Woody Page was railing on about 6 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's finally coming to fruition now. The scam is finally ready to bear fruit. Like you're finally getting past the Ponzi scheme part. You're getting your check from Bernie Madoff. That's finally how it's happening for once. Finally. I mean, it's incredible. Man. It's
I could go for a check.
I'll take one. I'm sure the Wilpons would too. but this is the whole point of an organization like the Colorado Rockies. This is not the tipping point necessarily, but this is the point you need to get when you finally realize when all of your dreams come to fruition, basically. This is what you plan for as an organization from day one when Jeff Breidich took over. This is the moment that he was aiming for this team. This is the start of something beautiful, at least God willing, we hope it is, because this team has been built from within. They've added pieces from free agency. They have made low-risk moves like the Greg Holland signing, something along those lines. Those are more low-risk stuff that you have to fill out your roster and get that good mix of veterans and rookies. I mean, we talked about the Cubs a lot last year because the Cubs were such an amazing farm system, and Theo Epstein had done an incredible job. Yeah, they had a great farm system. They were buoyed by a lot of those guys like Chris Bryant. But the Cubs brought in a lot of veteran free agents in order to make themselves over the hump. They brought in John Lester. They traded for Anthony Rizzo, traded for Jake Arrieta. They brought in like John Lackey, Dexter Fowler, those kind of guys. It wasn't just the amazing farm system. It was what you filled around that amazing farm system that made the Cubs take that next step. And right now the Rockies, you can make fun of all their foibles on the free agent market and the trade market, whatever, however you want. But at the same time, they really are going down the river to a certain point, and eventually they want to hit that point and eventually open it up into playoff contention. That's pretty much how this analogy is going to be going.
Well, let's talk about what the 2017 Rockies will look like to open the season, because they will not look like the ideal Rockies to open the season. David Dahl will be on the shelf as the 2017 season gets started. Ian Desmond will be the same way. As it stands right now, Anthony, give us a starting nine on opening day.
Well, because there are injuries to David Dahl, to Ian Desmond, to Tommy Murphy, it's going to look a little bit different than it might look on June 1st, let's just say. But my starting nine, I think you have Charlie Blackmon penciled into the number one spot. I think he's a very easy guy to write in the leadoff spot. Number one, done with a bullet, fine. Number two spot, I think DJ LeMahieu is going to be starting as the number two hitter. This is all conjecture. I have no idea either way. We saw Trevor Story hit a lot of number two last year. He's a very good number two hitter. We saw what he did with the power there. I think LeMahieu has cemented himself as one of the more dangerous hitters in the National League. I mean, he won the batting title last year. He hit 11 home runs last year. He's got some pop now too. But, I mean, as much as he is a quintessential number two hitter, and the fact that, oh, he's a second baseman and he can hit the ball to all fields, he's also a very dangerous hitter. He can go gap to gap. He can get doubles and triples with the best of them. So I think,
you know what's crazy that I read today? DJ, and everybody talks about, oh, yeah, DJ LeMahieu is just a slap hitter. He doesn't know how to drive the ball with any power. DJ last year, yes, he went the other way. 37.9% of his hits, the lowest pull rate among qualified hitters by 9 percentage points. But according to the Baseball Prospectus 2017 annual, most of his doubles and triples went to the opposite field, and he had as many doubles last year as Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you got to think about DJ as just like dunking in little liners over the head of the second baseman. DJ drove the ball last year.
He had 19 more extra base hits last year than he did in any previous season.
His exit velocity last year was the same as Paul Goldschmidt. He hit the ball harder with his average exit velocity than Nolan Arenado or Carlos Gonzalez last year. That's not some weak ass slap hitter that you put in the two holes. DJ's a legit hitter now.
I think DJ number two. I think Nolan number three. I think Cargo number four. Trevor Story can slot in number five. Mark Reynolds number six. And then you can throw in, I guess, Para. Para seven, Walters eight. And then John Gray number
comeback
nine.
Player of the year.
Sure. And if you want to get the lefties out of there, you can put in Para ahead of Reynolds because, have Mark Reynolds hitting seventh, whatever, It is what it is. So, and then John Gray. Yeah, I think that's going to be it. And of course, when you can get the full lineup in, you can go Blackman, DJ, Nolan, Cargo, Desmond, or Story, Desmond. Whatever you want to do there. Then, I Dahl, Murphy. it's a pretty good lineup, no matter what.
I mean, that's the thing. Like the lineup has the potential to be the best in franchise history. And the pitching staff as of right now looks like it could be the best in franchise history pretty reasonably. And that's more due to the fact that franchise history isn't very bright in that regard. But this is a team that in 2017 looks like a dark horse playoff contender and is going to get better in 2018 and beyond. And if that doesn't get your pants shortening, then
family podcast.
Wait, since when?
Since never. I'm just joshing.
Yeah, exactly. Let's call a spade a spade. I'm very excited. I'm quite excited.
And that being said,
quite excited.
Let's get Jesse Spector.
Let's do it. Jesse Spector, formerly of the Sporting News, one of our favorite follows on Twitter and has been since we started this godforsaken podcast back in 2014. We have for so long talked about having Jesse on the show, and we will finally get a chance to do that. We'll talk some Rockies. Jesse's involved with the Rockies in a different dimension this year. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Rockies from a national perspective and preview.
What? A different dimension?
The sixth dimension. The sixth sense. Bruce Willis. Willis McGahee. Connor McGahee. Connor Donahue.
Connor McGahee. These people you went to school with?
Never mind. You're not even playing the game anymore, man. We used to be so
you didn't even give me a second to
back in the day. You have to jump in. I don't have any time to waste. This is a loaded podcast, man. We're here for like an hour and 45 minutes.
I know, this is
going to
be a long
today.
Podcast. Sorry, guys. Season preview. Allow us this.
Jesse Spector's coming up next. Well, it has been literally, we started this podcast 3 years ago. And that entire time, we've been saying that we want to have our next guest on the show, and it's finally happening on episode number Joe Bimel on PDP 97. Jesse Spector joins us to finally talk a little Rockies and some Major League Baseball. Jesse, finally, welcome. How are you?
That feeling that you have when you're about to disappoint somebody. is
That's literally every morning when I wake up. Good morning, world. I can't wait to figure out what I do to let you down today. Jesse, welcome, finally. Literally, since we started this, it's been you've been one of our favorite Twitter followers. You've been one of our favorite reads, formerly with Sporting News, now with FanRag Sports, writing for Deal Breaker, The Score. And, of course, in 2017, Rockies Magazine, which is very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
So how pumped are you to finally be – you're like a full-fledged member of the Rockies world now that you're writing for the official publication.
I'll say it was awesome when Rockies Magazine came in the mail to my house and I was in it. It's been a while since I've been in print anywhere, and that was still a thrill. to see my words on an actual page in a magazine, which is kind of what I thought I was going to do when I went to Sporting News in the first place, and then I got there 6 weeks later, they canned the print edition forever, so I killed that. I don't think I'm going to have the same effect on Rockies Magazine of shutting them down once and for all, because it's a built-in business model that they have of sell this at the ballpark and people actually read it, which is
fingers
awesome
crossed.
Because, you know, for me, like, that's one of the ways that I got into baseball was, you know, and into reading for that matter, was the scorecard at the game.
Yeah.
Like, I still have some Yankees magazines and Mets magazines from when I was a kid, and, you know, to be able to do that and, like, know that maybe there's some kid in Denver who, like, you know, reads what I did and, like, finds it fun and, like, enjoys baseball in part because of that, that's awesome. And, like, I'm really happy about that and excited for it. So it's really cool, and I'm glad that I was able to make that work with the Rockies. I can't say enough good things about them and the way that they've welcomed me aboard, so I'm pumped.
It is pretty damn cool, man, and we're really excited to have you on too. Anthony, take it away.
Yeah, how did that relationship kind of come about? Did they contact you? Because, I mean, we always wanted to read your stuff and read your stuff about the Rockies. Whenever you've been on Sporting News, that's been really kind of required reading for us. And how did that kind of relationship take place with you guys and guys hooking up to get the Rockies magazine going?
Twitter?
The Rockies are very good at Twitter. Is that one of the things that kind of drew you to the team?
Yeah, I mean, as useless and stupid and awful as Twitter is, it's given me opportunities professionally, and this being one of them, of just like, yeah, I've interacted with at Rockies a lot over the years, and, like, you know, back and forth where, like, I joke with them, they joke with me. You know, I'm friends with a Major League Baseball team online. That's a weird thing. I don't remember exactly how it worked out, whether I said to them, because I said to them in the past, like, it would be cool to do something, but it just was never going to work out when I was full-time employed somewhere. I don't know if I reached out to them or they reached out to me when I got laid off at Sporting News, but it came together and was just like, this is a cool thing. We do this. You would fit. Let's make it happen. And we've made it happen, and it's awesome. So I'm excited about it. There's a picture of me somewhere in my parents' house of me on, like, the first day of seventh grade, which is, like, around 1993, of me in a Rockies t-shirt and a Rockies hat on my first day of school in Brooklyn. That was what I chose to wear to the first day of school, was Rockies
that
t-shirt
is fantastic.
And hat. So that goes way back. It's just weird how things work out. And yeah, like, I love Denver, and, you know, I've always had at least some fond feelings for the Rockies. They've had, they're one of the teams that employed, my favorite player, Jamie Carroll. So hooray.
The 2007 little engine that could, Jamie Carroll, when Matt Holliday certainly touched the plate on his sacrifice fly. Jesse, well, and I also want to say, I don't know what it was about, like, that generation in the 90s, there was so much expansion in all four major sports, and for some reason, like, it seemed like a fashionable thing to own merchandise from all those new teams, even if they weren't your teams. Like, I own Jacksonville Jaguars stuff for
reason. Me too.
So weird, right? I don't get what the point of that was for any of us.
I don't know, but I had a Mark Brunell jersey. I had a Miami Heat neon green cap. I had a Hornets cap.
It's very strange.
It is all teal and green. And only the Rockies have kept the purple going out of all those teams from the 90s.
The reincarnation of the Charlotte Hornets have done the same, I guess. Yeah, very strange. Well, Jesse, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned that the relationship with the Rockies obviously was a very unique thing for you on social media. Before we get into talking about actual baseball things, I kind of want to cover the way that you've been – like I described before we started recording today, you've been sort of like involuntarily sucked into the orbit of Rocky's Twitter, which I feel like we have to apologize to you for, because I can't imagine that, like, as a New York-based national baseball writer, that that's like a positive thing. You're like, oh, good, now the Rockies people are obsessed with me, because we're all so goddamn weird. But that, I mean, like, when you started on Twitter, and especially, you know, baseball Twitter, what, looking back on that now and where you are at this stage with, how do you encapsulate what you see in Rocky's Twitter? Because it's so unique and it's so weird.
Yeah, you guys are weird, and that's fine. I like that. Weird is good. I'm weird. I'd much rather deal with a bunch of enthusiastic weirdos than, well, I'll just come right out and say it. People from, you know, Toronto who think that, like, I hate the Blue Jays, think that they stink, and I'm out to get them at all costs because I've written some critical things about the Blue Jays over time. Last year, I wrote that, like, my good thing to look forward to for the Rockies was basically, like, the best thing to look forward to this season for 2016 was, like, life will end soon. We're all going to die someday, and the universe is meaningless and nothing matters.
That's the crux of our entire podcast.
I reserve the right to retract this statement if the phrase Nolan Arenado is really good at baseball turns out to be the key to universal peace and harmony. So far, it has not.
Which it should. I mean, let's be honest, it should be.
Yeah. But I wrote that. I wrote, like, you know, yeah, the Rockies are going to be terrible. And you know what? They weren't. So, you know, good on them for that. And nobody wound up throwing that back at me like, oh, you stupid idiot. You said the Rockies were going to be garbage and they were actually kind of mediocre. You're a moron. Nobody was like that. I feel like it's one of the better, you know, Twitter fan bases, because I have not dealt with people being like super touchy and annoying about things, and maybe that comes with, you know, not having been in the playoffs in 10 years and having been twice in 25 years. Maybe, I don't know, or three times. Shouldn't shortchange it. Three times in the playoffs.
Sort of that sexy NLDS appearance in 95.
Yeah.
No, I'd much rather deal with weird and like having a perspective on. Yeah, it's been kind of crappy, and like maybe the Rockies will get good, and then, you know, you'll see the turn into a bunch of obnoxious blowhards. I don't know. It's
it's definitely possible.
Something that I look forward to seeing it happen. But either way, I feel like if I'm sucked into this, at least I'm kind of sucked in on the ground floor of whatever's happening. So
that is true. That's a very good point.
Yeah. And before you ever really got involved more in Rocky's Twitter, like, you're from, you know, you're from Brooklyn, you live in New York. What is you wrote for a national publication. What is the national sense of the Rockies? Because whenever it seems like the national people grab a hold of something, it's always either a 20-19 game in Coors Field, or it's always a trade that they made, or the lack of a trade they made, or a weird signing. What's the national feel you get from someone in with a New York perspective of the Colorado Rockies?
A lot of time it's, what exactly is happening there? Like, they signed Ian Desmond to play first base. There's no way they really mean that. They're just saying that until they sign a real first baseman. Oh, they're really doing that. Oh, they're really putting Ian Desmond at first base. Well, that's something. And, you know, hashtag course.
Like, you slowly realize the calls are coming from inside the house kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't. I've looked at the Rockies a lot over the years as a national guy and been like, yeah, I don't get it, but I guess that they are just as confused as everybody else at how to build a winning and successful team in a unique environment, which, like, we joke a lot about, you know, hashtag cores, but it's real. Like, there's a real effect there. Like, it on pitchers and hitters. And the way that I would go would be, I would just go full on Blake Street Bombers with it. And, you know, like, this winter, I would have been like, all right, I'm going to sign Mark Trumbo and Chris Carter and anybody else who can just hit the ball out of the park all the time. And I'm going to try to outscore everybody 20-17, matter what.
Yeah.
And go for that and build your own pitching staff, Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But I certainly, and I think that the Rockies have sort of seen this over time where they don't really do it anymore. Bringing in starting pitchers from elsewhere is a risky and dangerous proposition. You don't want to commit money to people. Mike Hanson is the obvious case there and the obvious cautionary tale. But, because you just don't know. Maybe somebody gets there and, gets totally psyched out by it. And maybe they go and their breaking ball doesn't spin quite as effectively in the thin air, whatever it is. So I do like what they've been doing, from a draft standpoint and a, farm system standpoint. Let's get guys who throw the ball real damn hard and see how that plays. Because there's one thing that thin air doesn't affect, and that's the velocity of a fastball. Maybe it has a little bit of effect on Lubin, I don't know. But, let's draft Riley Klein and see what happens if he comes up and is throwing 102. I'm down with that. I like that.
Sure.
The Desmond signing, I like King Desmond. He's a good baseball player. I have no idea what you're thinking putting him in first base. You finally get out from under the Boone Logan contract, which was why are you giving Boone Logan 3 years? And you come back out of that and it's who did they?
You give it right to Mike Dunn for almost the exact same contract.
Yeah, right, Mike Dunn.
A little bit cheaper, but the same deal.
At the same time, it's they get Greg Holland, which is 20 other teams should have been in the mix for that dude.
Right.
Why wasn't everybody in on that? I like that. It feels a lot of the time the Rockies' blueprint is, it's a blueprint, but drawn on the blueprint is a dartboard. And they just stick it up against the wall and then throw darts at it. Ian Desmond, yes. First base. Okay.
It does kind of feel like baseball Mad Libs at some points.
Yeah. And you know what? I for a team that I don't have a great emotional interest in, it sure makes them interesting.
Sure.
I guess sometimes that's all you can hope for.
If I was a full-on Rockies fan, I might feel different about it, but they're not boring, and there are a lot of teams that are boring, so, good on them for that.
As two full-on Rockies fans, I think I speak for both Anthony and myself when I say I wouldn't recommend it.
Nah.
there's probably better things you could do with your time.
Is that's the way it is, for so many teams, though.
True.
For 29 teams at the end of the year, that's how it is.
Yeah, for 29 teams at the end of the year, and then just, on a regular basis, there's 15 teams that, would you rather, And I embrace the Mariners for this, too. It's Jerry DePoto is going to trade everybody.
Yeah.
Cool. It would be annoying if I was a Mariners blogger, and it might be a little bit tough if I, especially because the kind of fan that I am where Jamie Carroll's my favorite player. I latch on to weird dudes. The Mariners aren't trading Robinson Cano or Nelson Cruz. So the guy that I would, find myself attached to in the Mariners would get traded immediately. That's just kind of the way that would go down. I'd way rather be following the Rockies or the Mariners than the Padres.
That's true.
And maybe they're about to had a couple of crazy years, but year in and year out, the Padres are just kind of they got a team.
Nice ballpark. Beautiful city.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. They're very bland. Anthony and I were having this conversation when I was in Los Angeles last week that the Padres are, everything about the Padres is just the epitome of background noise. The uniforms are boring. The athletes on that team are boring. The ballpark creates boring games, unless you're a baseball nerd and you like pitchers' duels and all that kind of stuff. It's just the fans aren't really that into it. When they are, they're surprisingly dickish in San Diego. They're just very much there's nothing that you can really attach to the Padres. They're just a tall glass of milk.
Let's slow down here. Milk is good.
Milk is good. I agree. But there's no there's no strawberry
cookies,
syrup
no
slash
cake.
Chocolate syrup. True. That's all true.
Yeah.
That's all fair.
I guess that cream.
When Jake Peavy won the pitching triple crown, I guess that was the chocolate chip cookies to go with the Padres milk. It makes sense. All right. That makes sense. Well, actually, that segues as well, because the next question that I wanted to ask you about is Padres related in that Bud Black comes over for 2017. And I feel like Bud Black is a very, I don't want to say he's an underrated component of this team, but I think that if this was a situation where a guy like Bud Black had been hired in a different market that had a similar circumstance as the Rockies, young team, a lot of talent, seems like they might be primed to break out, I feel like he'd be getting a lot more focus and a lot more hype than he is. And maybe I'm just not seeing it in the same places that everybody else is. But it feels like the first time the Rockies have put actual real thought into a managerial hire, because God knows Buddy Bell wasn't that way and Walt Weiss wasn't that way. Jim Tracy, I guess, kind of, but he took the job by default because Clint Hurdle got fired. But with Bud Black, I mean, this seems like an intelligent move. That move, from your perspective, especially the fact that he's a former pitcher, a guy who knows what it takes to keep arms healthy, yada, yada, yada. How do you think that affects this team now?
I think it's good, and I think that it's also, you know, he's been in the NL West a lot, and, you know, he does have a familiarity with what Coors is all about. I think that helps. He's, you know, he goes in eyes wide open to that. And yeah, I think that, you know, of all the people they could have hired, he was the best pick. So aside from me, I would do a great job. And I campaigned for it on Twitter to incredibly deaf ears. That was the one time that the Rockies wouldn't respond to me on their Twitter account.
Jerks.
Very disappointing. But I wound up, you know, I'm working my way up from a magazine columnist to eventually, I'll take over for Bud Black.
Yeah, you're just doing it from the inside now.
Magazine columnist, general manager is usually how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, so
I look forward to that.
Yeah. So Jesse,
he's a good manager and was talked about for a lot of other jobs, and it seemed like, you know, I think, was it Atlanta where it seemed like it was going to happen and then it just didn't?
Yeah.
Whatever reason. I don't remember the exact details on that because kind of a lot's happened since then.
Was that actually Washington last year? Wasn't it Washington right before they hired Dusty Baker? They had like a deal in place for him? For Bud.
Yeah,
and then for whatever reason, everybody was like, no, never mind. We're not going to do this. And by the way, Dusty Baker's manager now.
Yeah. They cheaped out on him. That was it.
Unsurprisingly.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Well, this year,
yeah,
I.
That's one. Would you rather be a Rockies fan or a Nationals fan? If you had to pick.
That's a good.
This is the age old question. Did you want to be always disappointed at the end of the year or be disappointed in
or
June?
No, going into the year that you're going to be disappointed. Yeah, that's true. Man, that is a good question. That is a really good question. I feel like there is, at least from my perspective, there is some type of, I don't know, maybe it's because I was raised Catholic until I went to college, but it's like you're paying some type of penance by being a Rockies fan and knowing that this is just going to be an existence of suffering. Like, I feel like I'd rather go through that than getting my hopes up and just losing in the NLDS every year.
I could see that. I think there's also something freeing to knowing that your team, you know, generally has pretty low expectations of just like, all right, you know, you can enjoy bad players more. And, you know, honestly, like, I grew up in New York at a time when, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and like the Yankees were decent, but they were never a real contender. And the Mets were like contenders, but flawed in pretty much every imaginable way. And then in the early 90s, they both went in the toilet when I was like 10 or 11 years old. So like, I kind of grew up with that where it was like, yeah, you're just going to, like, you're going to have a couple of favorite players, and when you go to the park, it's going to be fun. You're going to root for them to win, but you know that it has no meaning at all. Then eventually they made the playoffs, and you get really emotionally invested, and that's when you kind of want to die.
Yeah, always.
You know, that's the playoffs. I love this so much, I want to die now.
So Rockies fans are still kind of coasting off fumes of playoff appearances from 10 years ago, like 07. It's the 10-year anniversary of Rocktober this year. And like 2009 was, you know, was supposed to be the year. And then 2010, when they had a better team and then they collapsed. That's getting to be a long, long time ago. And yet we are still talking about it.
My Rocktober sweatshirt is somewhere lost in my mother-in-law's house in Massachusetts. And I don't think I'm ever going to see it again. It's very disappointing.
Well, Jesse, for
it was so
for...
cold at that game in the World Series.
Oh yeah, I mean,
I was wearing a hoodie and bought another hoodie at that game.
Well, they just make the whole plane out of the hoodies.
Yeah.
Well, for Bud Black this year, he does have a very enviable task of writing Nolan Arenado's name into the lineup every single day. For someone who is not indoctrinated into the Rockies fandom and how good Nolan Arenado is, what would you tell somebody about how good he is? How would you equate it in terms that they can understand? Like, explain it to someone like their five. How good is Nolan Arenado?
Well, I have a 4-year-old daughter, so that
well, perfect then.
That works.
She's a goldmine for good
Alex?
Quotes on Twitter too.
Yeah, that's Nolan. He's really good. He's really good at hitting. He's really good at fielding, and he's happy about how good he is at baseball. But he's nice about it, and he tries really hard. And he's a lot of fun to watch. And if you watch what he does, you'll see. How to play baseball at third base. It's a really hard position because the ball comes at you really quick, and he's very, very good at catching the ball. And when he hits, he's very, very good at hitting the ball, and he hits it very far.
That's pretty good. That's all.
Yeah,
I mean, that covers all the
that
covers all the specifics. Jesse, we got a couple more for you, and we'll get you out of here. One that I think would be we'd be remiss if we didn't ask. You have a kid who is at a very impressionable age for sports fandom, and now that you have been usurped into this universe, are you going to attempt to turn your children into Rockies fans? Because, again, wouldn't recommend it.
Well,
I think you could. I think it'd be bold. It'd be a bold thing in New York. They'd be unique.
Yeah.
maybe not in a good way.
Both of my kids... and especially my daughter, my daughter's 4, my son's 2. My daughter is infatuated with Mr. Matt and Mrs. Matt. Loves them. So,
which, to be fair, I'm 31 and I am too. So,
yeah. And you know, we live in Queens, and the Mets are in Queens, and my daughter, I asked her the other day, who's your favorite player, and her answer for the last several months now has been consistent. She just says.
Astrubel.
Yeah, you know, Astrubel Cabrera. And,
nice.
And I was like, what about, you know, Yoenis Cespedes? And what about Syndergaard, who she calls Syndergarten, which I love. but she's always like, Astrubel. Astrubel is my favorite.
That's impressive.
So
she's impressed by his career renaissance.
She's in on the Mets. I think that there is room for her to also enjoy the Rockies for a couple of reasons. One being, you know, as much as we have tried as parents to be like, yeah, you can, you know, pink and purple aren't just for girls. You know, we never had that plan to like push pink and purple. And she didn't care about pink and purple until she had a baby brother, and at which time everything flipped and she's like, everything has to be pink and purple.
Gotcha.
So the Rockies being the purple team, I think that she likes that. And she likes Dinger, which has
that's key.
Turned me on Dinger because, after all, mascots are for kids, right?
It
didn't bother me so much that he's a dinosaur who wears a shirt and no pants. His shirt isn't big enough. He should have a bigger shirt. Like, if he's not going to wear pants, that pot belly's got to cover it up more.
Do we need a Mrs. Dinger? Like Mrs. Medwin, Mrs. Dinger? Would that be a thing that maybe could help things out with Dinger? Get some pants on?
That's interesting.
They should. I'd be all for a Mrs. Dinger. That's something that should happen. And the one thing, I think the reason that everybody doesn't like Dinger isn't so much that he's a dinosaur who doesn't wear pants. Because dinosaurs, according to the historical record,
if you can believe it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get Carl Everett on the show next week. He can dissect all of that. I think it's the way that he stands behind the – like, that's what people don't like. He stands behind
absolutely.
The
plate.
Absolutely. Yeah, the front-running mascot, as Steve Berthiaume called him.
And that is annoying, and it's ridiculous. But he's there. Everybody knows that he's there, so – yeah, that's and honestly, I can even turn that into a good thing. If I turn on a Rockies game, like, and Dinger's standing behind the plate, it keeps my kids' interest a little bit more.
And that's true. Are behind the plate. That's fair.
And you know the Rockies are winning that game, and it's late, so that's a good thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's fair. That's fair, actually.
Was there a second part of that question that I
There wasn't a second part to that question, but I do have a follow-up question, which is and by the way, if you did not catch this, I think it was last year, but Jesse had his daughter Alice rank all of the Major League mascots, which was a phenomenal piece that was up on Sporting News. So go find that. It's a slideshow, and it includes Alice's commentary, which was fantastic. So go find that. But, Jesse, last thing before we get you out of here, this season from the Rocky Mountain region into Rockies fans and parts unknown, people are optimistic, which is a rare thing for us, as you have come to know. But give us your thought process and maybe a prediction for 2017. There are a lot of people who think maybe this is a dark horse contender for a wild card. I saw something the other day that was a prediction that if the Rockies can get solid starting pitching, they could push toward 90 to 95 wins this year. I think that's a little bit optimistic. And that was from a national outlet, which made it even more baffling. But your thoughts and possible projection for this season?
Yeah, I think 90 to 95 is a little optimistic, but it's not crazy. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I think that one thing that the World Baseball Classic showed me is in a way that I've always known, and like it's been the case in past WBCs too, but like for some reason it really clicked on this one, is how close baseball is and how, you know, especially like the Team Israel run. Like, that was a team of mostly minor leaguers, including a couple of pretty cool Rockies prospects.
Right.
You know, standing toe-to-toe with the Netherlands, with Japan. You know, the Japan game wound up, you know, not going their way, but it was a tight game. And just all throughout that tournament of just, you know, what a knife edge baseball is on all the time. And, you know, maybe it's something that I should have thought about a couple of years ago too, when like, you know, I and the rest of the world had the Red Sox, you know, running away with the American League East and they wind up finishing last. It's a lot easier to, you know, poop in your pants and fall flat on your face in that way and to lose games. Cause,
which we do regularly on this podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. George Brett on then.
Oh yeah.
I live with somebody who poops in his pants, you know, four times a day. So that's you know, that's how that rolls. I'm used to it.
So you'll fit in here with the Rockies Twitter.
Yay! So I don't know what to expect because the Rockies are such a team that like, what if John Gray is just awesome all of a sudden? Like, not that he's not good now, but like, how far away is a guy like that from like flipping the switch and just mowing down everybody for a year? I don't know. And so the difference between winning 70 and winning 80 is a lot smaller than anybody thinks. And so is the difference between winning 80 and winning 90. And like, especially when you get into, you know, the wild card and what teams can do at the trade deadline, and if your team stays healthy, what a boost that is. That, as much as anything, like what we saw from the Royals in 2014-2015, the Royals stayed unbelievably healthy both of those years.
Yeah, right. True.
Like to the point where, like, coming back after 2014, where I'd picked the Royals to be a wild card team that year and was correct somehow, didn't have them winning the American League pennant or anything, but like, I like that team. I think they look pretty good, and I think if they could, you know, sort of catenaccio their way to the American League wildcard, which they did. And then the next year I came back and people were like, oh, you know, nobody's thinking the Royals can do it again. Everybody thinks it was a fluke. And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking it would be third or fourth, but I don't think it's because it was a fluke. I think it's because they played 162 games and then the entire playoff run, got to game 7 of the World Series, and nobody got hurt the whole year. They had like 10 guys that played 100 or more games, which is unheard of. And then they go out in 2015 and like Alex Gordon gets hurt. And that's like the only injury that they have the whole year. And they're able to, you know, to overcome that. Then last year, dudes got hurt sort of on the regular for them and they couldn't deal with it. And, you know, they were still a good team, but ultimately fell short for that reason. And that's so much the case in baseball so much of the time. And what makes the Dodgers last season, like, so compelling for what they did, like, Clayton Kershaw was out for 2 months, and they somehow were even better without him, which made no sense. Like,
28 guys on the DL, 15 pitchers made starts. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, kudos to them for that, because that's the kind of thing that should absolutely submarine a season. And then also makes it kind of scary of how good they might be this year, although they already have some injuries of their own. So who knows? That is also kind of the thing that happens when you have an older team like that. So, yeah, if you can stay healthy, and if, like, two guys have, you know, breakout seasons, you know, you have a good core. You know what you're getting from Nolan. You know what you're getting from Cargo. You have a decent idea that, like, maybe DJ LeMahieu's not going to win another batting title, but, like, you know what he gives you. You know that he's, you know, going to get a bunch of hits and be on base all the time at the top of the order. So you know that that lineup is going to be pretty good, if not, you know, one of the better lineups in the league, home and road. So, yeah, the starting pitching is a question, and, you know, you like the bullpen. So why not? There's also, you know, 15 teams in the National League. There's probably 10 of them who can also say why not. Like, you can count out the Reds, the Brewers, the Padres, the Phillies, kind of. Like, the Phillies are getting better, and I think the Phillies are going to surprise people, but they're not there. Like, they're still a year or two away from being able to be like, okay, we're making the leap. The Marlins are also in that group. Like, nothing's happening with them.
Right.
And unfortunate reason why, but, like, yeah, like, they had an ace pitcher who died, and that sucked.
Yeah.
It also means that they are not a good team right now when you're just looking at 2017. So, like, those teams you can kind of count out. And then, like, you know, the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Nationals, the Giants, the Dodgers are good teams, but they're not all, like, first of all, they're not all guaranteed to make the playoffs because there's six of them in five spots. But, like, there's those two top teams at the top of each division. And then you've got, like, the Pirates, the Braves, kind of, if they're, you know, if they're a step ahead and they've added those veteran pitchers because they think that they are, where if things break right, Pirates, Braves, Rockies, Diamondbacks too. So 10 teams where that are legitimate, you know, thoughts of playoffs, and the Rockies are one of them, where a year ago they really weren't, and they took some steps in that direction. So good for them. And, you know, we'll see how it works. It's a fascinating team and a fascinating roster, and I look forward to watching them play. So it should be a fun summer.
He is Jesse Spector. You can find him on Twitter at Jesse Spector. You can also find him in Rockies Magazine in the 2017 season, which is fantastic. And Jesse, it's been way too long before we got a chance to do this, and it will not be this long before we get a chance to do it again. And we can't thank you enough for the time, man. And it'll be fun having you as, like, a semi-official adopted part now of Rockies Twitter, with our sincerest apologies and also our largest excitement now that you're collecting checks for your hard work having to deal with us.
Well, also, my sincerest apologies to anybody on Rocky's Twitter who's now following me, because that's generally my reaction whenever anybody comes up to me and says, hey, I follow you on Twitter. Oh, I'm sorry. So, thank you guys for having me.
I don't know that feeling.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jesse. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you.
We will transition from our good pal and freshly coronated king of people who have been involuntarily adopted into Rocky's Twitter, Jesse Spector, and we will transition to the emperor, the puppet master, and the king maker of Rocky's Twitter, and that is one Brian Kilpatrick, the head honcho of PurpleRoad.com. And Brian, welcome back, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. I am enjoying my role of the headmaster and good boy of Rocky's Twitter as well. And
that's true.
I'm glad that you guys had
me
back on.
Well, and we had to have you back on because we wanted to ask you if the balm is working from the burn that we laid on you in the Rocky's Twitter tourney bracket.
Ooh,
earlier this
I was
week.
Hoping you wouldn't bring that up.
Oh!
Yeah,
oh,
I mean, you gotta start off with that. I mean, God, do you want me on the show or what?
We basically just brought you on for a public flogging.
Yeah.
Yeah,
works.
you guys really took it to me, you know, and hey, gotta own it.
Okay, I do have to ask one question, though. Is Rocky's Twitter, the Rocky's Twitter tourney, which has been going on now for, what is this, week number three? If the Rockies win it, that's kind of a letdown, right? You want, like, a Cinderella story. You want, I mean, even though we're a two seed, you want, like, the Cinderella.
There's a 12 seed that is charging through this whole tournament, by the way.
And a Dodgers fan.
And he's a Dodgers fan, all that.
Yeah, Dinger's destroying everybody.
Unsurprisingly.
Hey, I mean, look, there's, regardless of what happens, there's going to be a lesson to be learned, and I'll probably write something up, something stupid up about it on Purple Rose as soon as the tournament's over.
The lesson is all of your tweets are terrible except for this person's tweets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's true, so which is accurate also.
Just shut up. That's going to be it. Okay.
Moral of the story, everybody shut the hell up on Twitter. Aaron, by the way, is just boat racing BSN Rockies right now. He's up 62-38% with 8 hours left in balloting. By the time everybody hears this, the vote will be over. But, man, we're going to let a Dodgers fan into the Final Four. Anyway, neither here nor there. We're here to talk about the 2017 Colorado Rockies with our good buddy Brian Kilpatrick, who is set to give us some of the insight into this roster. Anthony and I were talking right before we got started. Everything is basically set and ready to roll with the exception of the final two spots in that rotation. We know that, you know, coming into this year, you knew that Tyler Anderson was going to be there. You knew that Tyler Chatwood was going to be there. You knew that John Gray was going to be your front runner, and you assumed that Chad Bettis was going to be there. Now, unfortunately, obviously Chad is dealing with the worst possible thing that any of us could be dealing with right now. And I think we'll probably do every week from now until we see him on a mound again, yeah. We're wishing him our best, but that leaves now two spots open in this rotation. Contenders for it have been, among others, I guess you could throw into the conversation, like some veteran guys. Maybe there's been a Chris Russon or a Christian Bergman who've been talked about. But really, it's been Kyle Freeland, Antonio Senzatella, Jeff Hoffman, and Herman Marquez. Who gets those spots, Brian?
I think it's more or less set. I think it's going to be Freeland and Senzatella in the rotation. Okay. And for the small wrinkle, I think Herman Marquez is going to make the club as the second long reliever to start the season.
Interesting.
You know, there's been some chatter since the start of the spring that the Rockies kind of like Marquez as a reliever. And so when I saw that Harrison Musgrave got sent back to minor league camp today, that pretty much etched it in stone for me. Now, I could be wrong, but just kind of based on what I've heard and based on, you know, looking at who's left and kind of factoring in the injury to Chris Russon, I think that all three of those guys make the roster.
Yeah, and for you, who was the most impressive of those guys coming into camp? Because we didn't really think about Freeland coming in, or really Senzatella for that matter, considering his kind of lost 2016 season. We didn't really see them as viable candidates right off the bat, but everybody has impressed incredibly so far in camp. Who's the biggest surprise to you?
I think it's Freeland, and I don't know if I should say surprise, because I'm not surprised about it, because Tyler knows this just as well as anybody, that you know, the Rockies kind of had him on the fast track for a little bit before that injury, the injury problems he went through a year or two ago, right, or whenever it was. But you know, there was talk about that, and they really liked him. They thought they could get him to the big leagues in a hurry, whether it was in the rotation or in the bullpen to start. I am surprised that he's come out and pitched as well as he has. Just because he had some issues last year striking batters out. Some of his peripherals weren't great, but you know, a lot of that could be attributed to, because there's like a revolution going on at AAA Albuquerque with how Daryl Scott is handling these pitchers and the stuff he's having them work on, and they're not showing a lot of reason. They're not showing like way impressive results in AAA, but like they get to the majors and they just look ready, and it just looks like he's doing such a good job polishing these guys up. And
which, by the way, is a
pitch this spring.
Yeah,
that's a feeling we've never had. We've never seen guys come from AAA to the majors and think, "Oh, this guy looks ready." So that's like a whole new sensation for any of us.
Yeah, exactly, and it's been really cool, and it's I think it's starting to get to the point where it's like proven now. I mean, God, you almost don't want to say that following this team and all the disasters that seem to happen all the time. But just like look at the results, look at the guys who have pitched there. and how they transition to the big leagues, and just even if the results aren't immediate due to whatever factors you want to place on it, like the Rockies play a lot of tough teams because of the division they're in. They have to pitch at Coors Field, et cetera, et cetera. But these guys have come up and just looked the part of big league pitchers. Am I wrong?
No.
So, yeah. I mean, that's something that I think factors in here as well. But, you know, it's been really impressive to see Freeland pitch as well as he has, because there were some concerns about him toward the end of last year, although in hindsight it kind of looks like that it was nothing.
Well, yeah, and I love just seeing – I know spring training stats or whatever and runs, whatever. I like seeing the fact these guys are pounding the zone a lot more. You look at all the starters right now in camp in the spring training. Tyler Anderson, 6-1 K-to-walk ratio. Chatwood, 3.5-1. Gray, 5-1. Freeland, 3-1. Senzatella, 6-1. Even Marquez is 2-1, and he's the worst of the bunch. Musgrave, 7-1. Like, it's amazing to see what the success these guys can have when they don't kill themselves by walks. And it's amazing to see that's some kind of revolutionary idea, but it seems to have been pounded in these guys' heads in the minor league system and from these pitching coaches in the minor leagues all the way up to the big leagues. And now in big league camp, these guys are performing the way that we've thought they could for years on end.
Exactly. And that's at some point over the last couple of years, it looked like there was just a whole shift in mindset, and guys are finally starting to buy into stuff. And you can see it in the minor league results too. It's not just this spring, although some of those numbers are really impressive this spring. But I mean, the last couple of years, guys have gotten so much better at throwing strikes, and obviously it happened to a pretty significant degree at the major league level last year too, because the Rockies were just, for several years there, when they had all those staffs built for pitch to contact and whatever, were just awful in terms of walks per nine and all right. of that. And it started to get a lot better last year. And I don't see that changing, even if some of these young pitchers take some lumps. I don't know that it's going to be the result of, you know, not throwing strikes. And Bud Black said as much this past offseason to me when I talked to him, that you know, he's really impressed, like super impressed with the mentality these guys have, where they're not going to stop throwing strikes regardless of what opposing hitters are doing. And that seems like the perfect starting point to me.
Brian, let me ask you this question. The way the Rockies are going to look to start the season, oddly enough, is not the way that we're expecting them to look throughout the season. At some point this year, you would expect really the ideal lineup defensively to look something like David Dahl in left, Charlie Blackmon in center, Carlos Gonzalez in right, Nolan Arenado at third base, Trevor Story at short, DJ LeMahieu at second, Ian Desmond at first. I would think Tom Murphy behind the plate is probably your best option long-term going forward, and John Gray is your number one on the mound. But to get the season started, David Dahl is not going to be healthy, Ian Desmond is not going to be healthy, Tony Wolters is likely your number one catcher. This team out of the gate, is it unfair to say that April and maybe into the middle stretch of May are more crucial now than we've seen in recent memory? I mean, obviously we haven't seen a whole lot of teams around here who it seemed like we're going to contend in recent memory, but the first 6 weeks of this season seem crucial for them to be able to tread water in order to get everybody back and healthy.
And you use the exact term that I was about to bring up, is all they need to do is tread water. And, you know, say what you want about, you know, on an island, how the Desmond signing looks, and even how the Parra signing looked last offseason, stuff like that. But this team is it's perfectly positioned, even with the injuries, just to tread water for a month or two. You know, you can do worse than Mark Reynolds short-term at first base. I think, you know, just look at how well he performed last year and how good the team – well, I mean – shouldn't say how good the team was, but how, you know, okay they were, all things considered, with him at first base last year. And I don't think Gerardo Parra is going to be the worst player in the league this year. He very well might be if he gets 400 plate appearances again. But I don't think he's going to get that many, and I think he's going to do just fine filling it short term. So essentially what you have is you have last year's starting lineup filling in short term until Dahl and Desmond get back. And
that's a really good way to put it.
I think he can do a lot worse than that, especially with the organic growth they expect from the pitchers. And the bullpen's going to be better. I don't care what anybody says. So, I mean, just everything points to them getting better just simply by luck, let alone, like, you know, but if Greg Holland ends up being the Greg Holland we saw a couple years ago. So, You know, it's still a team that's in a much better position this April than it was last April overall. And then obviously when you get guys like Dahl, Desmond Murphy back some point in late April, May, whatever it is, then you can really start to see what this team is supposed to be.
Yeah, and so, Brian, overarching question here. I mean, it's opening day. We're coming up. We got the aura in downtown Denver has already started to be amazing. What's your favorite part when you go to the ballpark on opening day? I know we got a big Purple Row thing that's going to be a meetup beforehand. What's your favorite part about being a part of opening day and being around that area in lower downtown Denver?
Well, being not from Denver, just walking around and seeing everybody in Rockies gear, and they're all out at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and bars are already starting to get packed. And I live in a place that doesn't even serve alcohol until 11:30, so it's kind of cool to be out at 9 o'clock on the street and see people already starting to get buzzed, and everybody's just super happy. Like, it's just a super fun, bright atmosphere. It's everything that baseball is supposed to be all the time, but it's like, you know, times 100 because it's opening day. So just, I don't know, man, just the feeling that you get walking down the street and seeing all that going on. Like, I get super happy when I go to Denver and just see all these people in their Rockies gear, regardless if the team sucks or not. Like,
for one day, there's an off season for the Broncos at the very
least. Exactly.
Like, there's never an off
season. Everyone is a Rockies fan. And it's, for me, it's surreal to see every time.
All right, Brian, last thing for you. We had you on. Brian is one of our oldest guests on the podcast. Episode number 8 of the PDP, May 7th, 2014. We had Brian on the show for the first time. And at that time, the Rockies were 22-14 after their game on May 7th, which was a win at Texas to open up a 2-game series there with the Rangers. At that point, you kind of looked at that team and thought, man, maybe they can hang around. I mean, it's worked for 5 weeks. Why not? And I remember we asked Brian, is it insane to think that maybe this team could somewhat hang around? And Brian basically said, yeah, I think so. And the Rockies ended up losing 96 games, and he was right. But this year, everything feels different. Obviously, the rotation feels different. The rotation feels good, which is something I think we've said maybe once before in Rockies history. The lineup is obviously going to be very good, maybe historically good. So, Brian, I want you to give me your best case scenario and your worst case scenario for this team in 2017.
I think best case scenario is this team gels, guys come back healthy, do what they're supposed to do. Like I said, the rotation gets organic enough improvement to where build on what they started last year, because keep in mind, I don't necessarily think this has to be a playoff year. I think it has to be a build on the momentum that's already there year. However, everything goes right. I think it's a team that can win between 87 and 90 games and be right there with the Dodgers near the top of the division. And I think that's a completely realistic scenario. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it happened. It sure would be awesome. But then again, worst case scenario is these rookie pitchers don't hold up for whatever reason, or even guys just go through a sophomore slump. Could happen with Tyler Anderson. Could happen with John Gray, though I don't see it. And you've got yourself a 72-75 win team again. So I don't think that this team's as volatile as some of the ones in the past. Like, I don't think there's a best case 95 wins, worst case 65 wins thing. I think it's a little bit more solid of a team. I don't think the range of outcomes is quite as wide, but there's only a few small things that could make the difference between a 75 win and an 85 win team.
He is Brian Kilpatrick, the main man behind Purple Row. You can find him on Twitter. He is at Purple Row BK there. We'll be checking in with him throughout the season. And Brian, we love it as always. And by the way, Brian did a whole hell of a lot of work to put together the Rockies Twitter tournament bracket, like, yeah, to the point that I can't even fathom what all it took to put together not only 64 accounts, but a tournament field for 64 accounts.
68 seeding with the first
schedule.
Four?
Oh, yeah, 68 yeah. with the first four. My God.
Man,
so that's pretty amazing.
69.
Nice.
Oh, nice. That was very nice. Nice and, Twitter account.
Dude, I'm a pro. I'm an absolute pro at wasting time. So that's your answer.
Well, it's worked out pretty great. But go follow Brian on Twitter. He's at PurpleRowBK. And check out the site all season long, PurpleRow.com. And Brian, we'll do it again soon, man. Thanks as always.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, the 2017 Colorado Rockies season will start with that legendary rivalry that has developed on opening days in recent years. The Colorado Rockies and the bitterly hated Milwaukee Brewers. Just the rivalries on which sports are based, really. It's like Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Giants, Rockies, Brewers is right up there. And we're very excited to talk about those Milwaukee Brewers in our first opponent preview of the 2017 season with Travis Sarandos, who joins us for the very first time because we don't get a chance to talk about the Brewers much. But Travis, one of our favorite people on Twitter, writer at Beyond the Box Score and Brew Crew Ball and Disciples Euchre and more. Travis, finally, welcome. What's up?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. How are you? How are things in Milwaukee these days?
I'm good. It's cold and windy and rainy today.
Awesome.
So I'm hoping that turns around for opening day.
Well, the good news is you have a dome, unlike Coors, am I right?
Right, but going to a baseball game in Milwaukee isn't just going to the baseball game. It's also, 4 hours of drinking in the parking lot beforehand.
Sure. Right.
So I would like to see some nice weathers.
That was my favorite part of the one game I went to in Miller Park, 2007, I think. I went to a Reds Brewers game, and Adam Dunn had won 600 feet for the Reds, and he's still playing for them. But the best part was going to the parking lot and just wandering around through all the cars and everything, everybody just tailgating. That was the coolest part of being in Milwaukee for a Brewers game.
Oh yeah, you bring people from out of town to the game here. And you ask them a year later, you're talking about the baseball game, and they just tell you everything that happened in the parking lot, all the tailgating, and then you're like, who was playing? It's like, shit, I don't know.
You don't see that with any other franchise, really. There's no other team really has that kind of pregame ritual like the Brewers do.
Yeah, I think you really only – it's like a college football atmosphere, kind of, in that a lot of the festivities take place beforehand. So it – And also because of the roof, they sort of have a built-in floor of how low interest in going to the Brewers game is going to go.
Right.
So even though they're bad, people are still going to go because a lot of that fun is before you even got in.
Oh, we have that with the party deck because it's party deck against the world out here, man. Obviously. That's the way things go in Denver, Colorado. Well, hey, man, let's talk about the 2017 Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers are one of the most interesting teams in baseball right now in terms of what they are building going forward. The pieces aren't there right now necessarily. The Brewers are coming off of a season in 2016 in which they went 73-89 and finished fourth in the National League Central. They are having no favors done for them by the fact that they're in the National League Central, which is absolutely loaded right now. But there are a ton of pieces on that farm system that are really good. There are players who have already graduated to the major leagues who can make impacts. Jimmy Nelson comes to mind. Those types of guys who were of kind of the last wave from that system before the system got loaded over the last couple of years. What's the feeling about this team going into this year? Obviously 2017 might be kind of a tough season again, but the future seems really bright.
Right. Yeah. They're a pretty interesting team. I would say the same thing about the Rockies, that they're one of the more interesting teams in the National League as well. They're just a couple of years ahead of where the Brewers are, where the Brewers would like to be. A lot of the top prospects, Lewis Brinson, other than Lewis Brinson, are probably a couple of years away still. So it's probably not time for them to be competitive. I would say, because you guys know that I like the Rockies a lot this year. I think that they could make a playoff run if everything goes right. I think if everything goes right, they could be, what people think the Colorado Rockies are actually going to be.
About 500 or so, yeah.
Right. The Brewers have some interesting guys on the top of the lineup. So if all those guys, Jonathan Villar was improved last year. Obviously, he came out of nowhere with all the steals, played well. Keon Broxton was good. Ryan Braun had a comeback. So if those guys stay where they were at last year, or maybe even get better, the top of the lineup is very interesting. And obviously, they have Eric Thames, the Korean import, I guess. Well, I guess he's just returning.
The big dong smasher, yeah.
Right. But so if any of that power is legit, that'll be fun to watch at least, because we had Chris Carter there smacking dingers all week or all year last year. So if we can get another one of those and compete for another home run title, that'd be fun.
Well, yeah, and for me, one of my favorite things to look at is this outfield. You look at like the best outfields in baseball. You talk about the Marlins outfield, the Pirates maybe, the Rockies even to a certain extent. I think one of the Brewers outfields, one of the most underrated in all of baseball, because Ryan Braun's going to do what he does every year. I love Keon Broxton's game. He's somewhat of a five-tool guy. He's got a lot of speed, plays really good defense. He got hurt last year, broke his wrist, but he's come back really well in camp. I'm a big Domingo Santana fan as well. You look at last year in terms of exit velocity, everyone's saying like that's the big thing this year is exit velocity. Last couple of seasons, we were really getting behind that. Broxton and Santana were in the top 10 in exit velocity. Now, it didn't really translate for Santana. He had a really disappointing year, was hurt a few times, but he was stinging the ball a lot of the times when he made contact last year. And Broxton was sixth in baseball in terms of average exit velocity, about 95 miles per hour. Like, I love those two guys, and I want to see what they can do with 500, 600 at-bats this season.
Yeah, I think Keon Broxton is legitimate, and he's got the speed and skills to be good even if the batting average normalizes a little bit. He was a little bit lucky, especially in the second half of the year.
Sure.
So we'll see. But I think he's a legitimate talent. I'm not as sold on Domingo Santana. I think he's got some holes in his game that I'm not sure are fixable. But the thing is, because we just talked about the prospects, and Lewis Brinson was ridiculous in his short time at AAA. And obviously he's in Colorado Springs, so you have to take that with several hundred grains of salt.
Have fun with that
but,
one. Yeah.
I mean, he hit 382, and he hit, he slugged 618. So if he does that, again, if he starts doing that for the first half of the year, I don't know how long they can keep him down, especially if Domingo Santana doesn't start to become what they hoped. We might see Lewis Brinson, sometime around the All-Star break taking over full-time in a major league outfield.
Yeah, and as good as the lineup could be, especially the outfielders, like I mentioned, the rotation is kind of rough. I mean, you're looking at a lot of guys with not a lot of upside. Junior Guerra was a nice surprise last year, but he's also in his 30s. What's the best thing you can say as a Brewers fan when you see the rotation coming into the 2017 season?
Right. I mean, if you're trying to buy the Brewers rotation as something that can be legitimate, you're asking yourself to buy a 32-year-old with 1 year of major league experience as a legitimate ace.
Right.
And that's, I mean, so that.
I feel like we've tried to do that a few times. Kyle Kendrick started opening day 2 years ago in Milwaukee.
And dominated, by the way.
He did dominate that.
What is it with the Rockies and Brewers every year on opening day out here?
It's the intensity of the rivalry, man. It's that natural born rivalry.
They're trying to push like a WWE feud on us.
It's like back when they first came up with interleague play and they decided that everybody had a territorial natural rival, quote unquote. Yeah. And the Rockies was
Kansas City, I don't even remember.
I think it was Kansas City, which doesn't make any sense because the Cardinals should be Kansas City's natural rival.
Nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as baseball teams are concerned.
As far as AL teams, yeah.
But I always remember that the Padres and the Mariners, like Major League Baseball, was like natural rivals, like the San Diego Padres and the Seattle Mariners. I was like, what in the hell? What are you talking about?
Oh, we all know that. That's obvious.
Those big Brewers Twins rivalries, are those big things too? The natural interleague rivals?
I mean, that one's a little bit more maybe than most of them because the Brewers used to be in the American League.
Yeah.
So we did have that rivalry with the Twins when we were still in the American League. And you do have the rivalry between Wisconsin and Minnesota in other sports. So it does make a little more sense. And you can make that drive. It makes more sense than Colorado and Kansas City anyway.
Yeah, especially, they should have just picked like a random one. The Rockies should have gotten like the Rays or something.
Or something just totally stupid. Like in the Midwest, that's right. It is all kind of more of the like the Big Ten rivalries that you follow around with all the teams that are there. I mean, like, of course, the Indians and the Tigers hate each other because, they're division rivals. But that kind of does make sense. It's a very much a college football atmosphere anyway in a lot of those kind of places. I mean, I went to school in Ohio. I know the drill there. That's kind of what it seems to be sometimes. And that would be a perfect one between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I mean, I hate some other schools in the Big Ten more than Minnesota, but I'm not a huge fan of Minnesota either.
So. Who's really a big fan of Minnesota? Let's be honest here.
Minnesota people also... Minnesota nice is not a thing. That's like it's like an insulting term that I have realized now that everybody I've ever met from Minnesota is like the worst human being on the planet. Without exception. I've never met a person from Minnesota that I was like, oh, nice guy.
What about
They're
Prince?
Awful. They're all awful. Well, I never met him. Oh, well. He seemed like a good enough dude. Travis, let me ask you this question, which also, as you guys were talking about, Keon Broxton made me realize that the Brewers have had both Broxtons in recent memory in Major League Baseball because they had Jonathan Broxton as well, and that's strange. But tell us about this pitching staff, because coming into 2017, you know your first two out of the gate, Junior Guerra is going to get opening day, Zach Davies is going to get game two. It seems like behind those guys, Willie Peralta, Matt Garza, and Jimmy Nelson, but Chase Anderson has been in the mix, Tommy Bones Malone has been in the mix, that Anthony used to work with in the Carolina League.
Oh, yeah.
What is that rotation going to look like through the first? I mean, the Rockies, you know you're going to get John Gray on opening day. You're going to get Tyler Anderson, it looks like, in game two. Who is going to stack up behind Guerra and Davies in that rotation?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they know, but they haven't said anything. Like, we still don't know what the rotation – they haven't told us. So, Willie Peralta's probably it because he stayed behind in Arizona to pitch today to stay on track to pitch the third game of the year. And Garza and Nelson are pitching the two exhibition games here against the White Sox
Garza
over the
weekend.
Garza
just got put on the DL, by the way, like 5 minutes ago, apparently. They just placed him on the DL with a strain break point. Garza.
Garza?
Breaking news, apparently.
Breaking news on the PDP. MLB Rock. Which is always good in a podcast.
Yeah. Brewers plays Matt Garza, strained right groin on 10-day DL. Love breaking news on a taped podcast.
Yes, this is brand new stuff that you guys know about.
So that might take him out of the equation, obviously. So.
Okay, so I guess it won't be Matt Garza. Which is great because Matt Garza is neither a good pitcher or a good person, so I'm fine with him not doing that.
Yeah, that's a good call.
So I guess it'll be Chase Anderson. I mean, I don't know, Tommy Malone.
Yeah.
You sound like we've sounded for so long talking about our pitching staff. Like,
this is why I was so excited for this conversation.
No, Jeremy Guthrie.
I'm excited about the Rockies.
Jamie Moyer
pitching staff this year. I like it. And
yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, this is like the first time where people are saying that and we're actually believing it. We're not like poo-pooing it to not focus on it.
Right, like the numbers are still anyway. Look like garbage because of Coors Field.
Oh, sure.
But like everybody's numbers look bad there. So, you know, Tyler Anderson, the best Coors pitcher in history. The best
Coors
ERA in history. It's wild.
No, besides,
John Gray
struck
out 16 without walking a man on September 17th last year. Like, they've got dudes who know how to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get Padres open starter Jolie Chacin back.
Him and Jorge De La Rosa, and they would have the ultimate Coors rotation.
They're still in the National League West. The D-backs out of camp.
And they're both going to post sub-1 ERAs against the Rockies all year, and guaranteed one of them throws a no-hitter.
Oh, yeah, easy.
That'll be great. But, Travis, when you look toward, this season, we asked Brian Kilpatrick this question a little bit ago as far as the Rockies are positioned for 2017. What's your best and your worst-case scenario for the Brewers this year?
Realistically, I think the best case scenario for the Brewers is probably .500, maybe, 82 wins would be just the best case scenario. And like 82 wins, but also the Cardinals suck. So they have like 79 wins, and we finish in second place with 82 wins. Like, that's the best case.
Oh, I'm all there for that. Absolutely.
So that'd be great.
If the wheels fall off, what's the worst case scenario for this team?
The pitching staff just falls apart, and it turns out Junior Guerra's stuff last year was a mirage, and we can't even trade him for anything because he gets lit up, and he's got a 8.5 ERA in May, and Ryan Braun's dumb breaks again, or he gets dinged for PEDs again, something terrible happens. It turns out Orlando Arcia is garbage and he can't hit over 200.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't think the worst case scenario, as far as records, I don't really think there's a worst case scenario. It doesn't necessarily matter too much. I think the worst case scenario would be the prospects just don't work out. So yeah. Orlando Arcia is bad. And Cam Broxton is actually bad. And Lewis Brinson is bad. And the pitchers, you know, all the other pitchers, like last year, Jorge Lopez was one of their top pitching prospects, and he got destroyed at Colorado Springs. So if that happens to Brandon Woodruff this year, if you see that happen with Josh Hader or Luis Ortiz, if those pitchers just get lit up, because the pitching is the problem. So if those pitchers are just getting lit up at Colorado Springs, that's probably the worst case scenario.
Oh, but maybe you'll eventually trade Ryan Braun. I know his 10-5 rights are coming up pretty soon, but if you can finally get out of that contract, that'd be nice.
Oh, he's got him, I think. I think he has
him. Or he does have him now. Oh,
but, who cares about the contract? I mean, they have the lowest payroll.
Oh, yeah. Only for the fact that Braun and Garza are 60% of the entire payroll. So, I mean, that's...
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Braun is 20 and Garza is 12.
Yeah.
And the whole Good thing God. Is 55. So...
That is insane. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's another we're not familiar for that around here with, you know, the Tulo and Cargo and De La Rosa deals, which now are almost all off the books. As of the end of this year, they will all three.
Except for Jose Reyes, the highest paid Rocky this year, still Jose Reyes.
God knows he's going to be one hell of a leadoff man for another team in the National League. Travis Randles is on Twitter. You can find Travis there. He is at Travis_MKE, which I just learned like 2 months ago is an abbreviation for Milwaukee. Travis, I'm actually going to be in Milwaukee at the end of next month, man.
Let's go to a baseball game.
Hell yeah, that'd be fantastic. I'm gonna be there for some very exciting Marquette University lacrosse against the University of Denver. So get fired up.
Wow, yeah, that
it's gonna be terrific.
I watched the lacrosse game once.
What'd you think?
It's a sport, and I think one of the teams won.
Yeah, presumably.
That's how every lacrosse game
seemed like
ends.
It was.
Yeah.
It seemed like a sport to me.
Yeah, yeah. There's athletic things that go on during it. Yeah, it happens. So go give Travis a follow on Twitter. He's one of our favorites. And again, a non-Rockies fan who was in the Rockies Twitter tourney bracket, which is terrific. And Travis, this is so great, man. We'll do it again when your boys come this way. We'll do it again. Yeah, yes. I did too.
I at least beat John Wrighty and Dan the Man. I got to the Sweet 16. I'm okay with it.
That's true. It's pretty good. And, you know, Travis, we can count on the Milwaukee voting block to push us into the Final Four, correct?
I don't think that I'm the guy to move the Milwaukee voting block.
It's okay. We're going to call Scott Walker later today.
Yeah, he's not doing anything right now anyway.
What is the deal with you people? You gave us Scott Walker. You gave us Paul Ryan. You gave us Joseph McCarthy. What's with your state, man?
Look, do not lump me in with these people.
That was perfect. The perfect response. Travis, thanks, man. We'll do it again whenever the hell the Brewers come this way.
Yes. Good. Sounds good.
Your Colorado Rockies hit the road Monday, April 3rd.
Our first pre-interview podcast, by the way?
I think so. Yeah, it's got to be,
on all cylinders.
I would think so. Jesse Spector, by the way, on Twitter at Jesse Spector, Brian Kilpatrick at PurpleRowBK, Travis Sarandos at Travis_MKE. Travis will be in that city and in attendance when the Rockies visit the Milwaukee Brewers from April 3rd through the 6th. That game on Thursday is a weird one. That's an 11:40 a.m. Mountain start time, which is strange. But Rockies Brewers will kick things off on Monday afternoon at 12:10. I know the Rockies are doing another watch party on the rooftop. So for those of you who are in Denver, you can sport your party deck against the world shirts on Monday on the party deck itself.
Ah!
And also, go get your shirt, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. Big thanks, as always, to Humble Monster for the fantastic work that they do. I'm going to get mine at the end of this week at some point. I'm so goddamn excited.
V excited,
man.
Yes.
And that'll do it for us We'll be back next week to preview the Rockies' home opener.
We've got baseball.
Rockies return home. Actual baseball will be played. They'll get the Dodgers for three starting on Friday the 7th, and then the Padres for three, and then on the road to take on the San Francisco Giants on Thursday, April 13th through Sunday the 16th. It's real baseball. So pumped. And you should be pumped as well.
Hooray.
And that's it. We'll talk to you next week for BDP 98. Until then, enjoy real baseball. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Butts?
What? I thought you just said butt.
You just said butt.
Maybe. Maybe I did.
Hello, this is Jesse Spector. Sorry I can't take your call right now.
Oh, no.
Please leave me a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message.
I'm going to leave him a message.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hi, Jesse. It's Tyler and Anthony with the Rockies podcast. You're probably going to get this after you actually talk to us. But we do this thing at the end of every episode, like a 90s CD, in which we leave like 30 seconds of silence. Then we have a hidden track. And today we're going to have the hidden track being us leaving you a voicemail. So
I hope it's worth it for all of us.
Yeah, I hope it is, too. I hope you save this voicemail forever. It's our dearest hope. Okay, we're going to call you back right now. Bye.